You won't be able to do backwards. It is a great pleasure tonight for me to introduce our speaker, and I would like to turn it over to Liz Z. Liz, it is all yours.
Hi, I'm Liz. I'm a compulsive overeater. Is somebody timing me? Yeah. Can I have some warnings?
Yeah, I'll give you a warning at 10 minutes and 5 minutes.
Oh, is that all? Okay. All right, then I'll have to see myself through this. Okay, let me give you my numbers to start with. I'm in the program almost 42 years. I'm currently abstinent from compulsive eating more than 23 years, and I am 79 and a half years old. So I have been learning how to recover for a long time, and there is still more to learn. It's progress, not perfection. So I'll start with what it was like before. I come from a family of normal eaters who do not have other addictions. They have their own issues, but it's a pretty healthy family in many ways. I was loved. I was allowed to be a child. But I was told that my first word was eat. And although I was a normal weight child, I was teased unmercifully about my eating. And I was told, I was teased about having a fat backside. I was told I eat too much, I eat too fast. And it was supposed to be funny. And I didn't know that I didn't have to laugh at it. And I didn't know that the underlying feeling was shame. And I didn't figure that out for many, many years. And in fact, after many years of program, ha, 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 no, it isn't funny. And the only other person who had that experience was my father, who would overeat only at festive meals, Thanksgiving, Passover. He would overeat and he would have sneezing fits. And he too would get teased unmercifully and everybody would laugh at him. Ha, ha, ha. And I don't know if he was aware of feeling shame, but I'm sure he didn't like being laughed at. And it never occurred to anyone not to laugh and tease. So I didn't start having an issue with weight until I was 15. And then the diet started. And I'm of the age where when you started to gain weight and you wanted to be thin, you took diet pills. And that was the era when the doctor gave you what was in fact amphetamines and you could get the prescription renewed forever. So I was able to be thin through up and down through college. And I think the first combination in pleasure when I was thin and shame when I was what I called heavy, which is a word I do not use in recovery. If I talk about a period when I was fat, I say fat, because that is a heavy is a pre-recovery word for me. I guess my sophomore year in college, I remember, you know, when I would lose weight and I burst out in the spring looking good and people would notice me and compliment me, I felt so ambivalent. I felt that combination of pleasure in being admired and fury that I was being valued by the pound, that I was being valued by how I looked. And, you know, I understand that I was taking 79 years, but I understand better and better how valid that combination of feelings was. And I also am aware, even though I was never a huge volume eater, that food always mattered to me. That I can tell you more about what I ate in college than I can about what I learned in college. I have vivid, vivid memories from the early 60s about what they served in the cafeteria and the different places where you could get the good this and the good that and the towns around where my college was. It's all very, very clear in my memory because it mattered. So then I went off to the Peace Corps in Africa. And it was a recently independent country, and the French still had a presence. And of course, the French know how to eat. So that was when I learned to eat the good food. So I learned to associate eating with culture and class, which is, you know, fabulous set of rationalizations for eating rich food. And because I was living in Africa, about a year into my 2-year stay, I ran out of the diet pills. And then I really had to start to struggle with my weight. And I also want to say at that time in my pre-program life that I come from an intellectual, secular Jewish family, no concept of higher power or God or spirituality. Everything was done by intellect and negative, only the negative was real. You know, any kind of, I remember my mother say, somebody tried to tell my mother positive thinking and she would say that crap. You know, that was the idea of trying to think positively. And it had to be done by grim determination, or it had to be done by reason, or it just wasn't worth doing. And it, at the time that I went into program, I had reached a time in my life where those tools didn't serve me anymore. And I came in through another program, and I came into the other program because I was married to somebody who hit bottom and went into another program. But the second I discovered the existence of 12-step programs, which is a big secret back in 1982, you know, unless you needed one, you didn't know they existed. I knew instantly, of course, that I belonged in OA. It was very, very obvious. So, you know, I went into the Other People program and OA simultaneously, more or less. And that was the beginning of the rest of my life, because what I had, I was not particularly having trouble with my weight. I may have, I don't even remember this, but I may have lost weight before I went to my first OA meeting, because, you know, that's how crazy we are. But when I first discovered the 12-step programs, I was in a state of spiritual despair, negativity, hopelessness, and despair, which is the nature of the spiritual disease. And the first thing I got was one day at a time. The idea, which served me in getting abstinent and still does, and also serves me in not being overwhelmed in coping with the world. And that was such a difference. I mean, I'm a nice Jewish girl. I was taught that my job was to worry. And all of a sudden, that was no longer my job. So I want to go on to my early years in OA. I got a sponsor and it didn't really work for me. I don't even remember. Luckily, it was right after the period when everybody had to be on gray sheets. So I don't think I could have tolerated being told what to do. And I had gone into another program where the idea was not do what you're told, but rather learn to trust the voice within. Learn to make decisions and not give yourself away all the time. But basically, I was doing 3 meals a day and 2 snacks if I needed it, and I didn't necessarily need it. And in a sense, that's still my plan of eating today. But I didn't really get it. There are certain behaviors I gave up 40, 41, 42 years ago that I never went back to, even through a prolonged relapse that I didn't know I was having. I know I stopped eating after dinner. I probably haven't eaten after dinner for 48. Dinner is over. That's the end. I stopped opening the refrigerator door and gazing into the refrigerator. I never went back to that. And gradually, I became more and more involved in OA because I was doing terrifically in my other, I even parlayed that one into a career. And I was never a star in OA. And it was very obvious to me, this was not something I could just, I could be a star, I could graduate, I could, I was never going to be the thinnest, I was never going to be the thinnest chick on the block. It was just, it wasn't going to be that way. This was a hard one for me. And I'm still never going to graduate, and I'm never going to be skinny. And that was just not my path. So I became more involved, and I was saying before the meeting in New York City, for many, many years, they had wonderful, wonderful, wonderful retreats twice a year. You know, here we are in the big city, and it's very urban. So twice a year, and I used to go to the winter ones more than the summer ones, but I must have gone to over 30 retreats over the years. We'd go out in the country, and there would be snow and woods and some kind of a stream or a lake, and many, many meetings and a talent show where you got all the unconditional love, no matter what risks you took and doing whatever it was you did or wanted to do, and a really intense spiritual experience. And that was one of the places that I got my first sense of higher power. That really intense sense of connectedness and unconditional love happened for me at those retreats and in that community. And I also heard people sharing their recovery. And I also I remember waiting for the bus at my very first retreat, and we're all standing in the cold outside, where the bus was supposed to leave. And all us newcomers who had never been to a retreat were worrying about what we were going to eat and about what it would be like for other people to see us eat. And I remember that anxiety. And, in fact, it was a wonderful experience. It was like, you thought everybody else would be eating 2 string beans and you would be shamed. And of course, it wasn't like that we were all human. And if we share, it's a sort of a sick as our secret situation, that we share that we're all human and we're all just trying. And none of us is perfect. And also that people do all sorts of different things. It's a learning experience to see how other people deal with eating issues as well as other recovery issues. So, this was tremendously valuable to me. Well, the trouble was that after around 10 years, I gradually stopped going to meetings. I was doing okay. I was living my life. I had a very intense, rich life. And I kept going to the retreats because I loved the retreats. And that is probably the main reason that I never thought I was leaving program. I just wasn't going to meetings anymore. And I was still eating three meals a day. And sometimes I would have a snack, or sometimes I would have two snacks. Well, the trouble was that the meals got bigger and bigger, the food choices got richer, and I was in such powerful denial that before I knew it, the snack would be, I had a house on Eastern Long Island, so I would be in the car and I would be stopping at a gas station on the Long Island Expressway. It would be mid-afternoon, legitimate time for a snack. And the snack would be two giant candy bars that I would eat in the car. But it was a snack. I had three meals and a snack. I went, never went back to grazing. I never went back to binging. I never went, and I do each, I'm not a sugar addict. To this day, I can have a dessert on a special occasion. It doesn't set me off. But, there was something wrong there, and I was in denial about it. So when I gained 100 pounds, I could not no longer deny that something was wrong. So I was afraid to do anything. But I was afraid that if I tried to do anything, it wouldn't work. And I was back to a state of despair and hopelessness and negativity. So what happened was I went to what I thought would be my last retreat. When you're in denial and you're negative, you rationalize everything. So this was right before they put in the ninth step, which turned out to be about action plan, but there were rumors flying around about what it would be. And somebody said they were going to put in something in the definition of abstinence that you had to have certain numbers, or you had to be a certain weight, or you were at apps. I don't know what it was, but I said, oh, that's sick. That's not recovery. I don't believe in that. OA doesn't work. All the other 12-step programs work. I don't think this is for me anymore. I'm not going to go to retreats anymore. So I go to this retreat and I meet an angel. I had just lost a job that I adored, where it had turned into a nightmare when my wonderful boss died, and it turned into a horrible dysfunctional thing. And so I wasn't working. And somebody came up to me at this retreat. We were talking, and she said, oh, you don't have a day job? The best meetings in the city, and it happened to be true at that time. She said, 5 days a week in the morning, right on your corner. And I walked into this meeting, and it was in a basement that was a nursery school. So there's little chairs, and I sat down in one of those little chairs, and I was home. And that was more than 23 years ago. And that is when my current abstinence started. And one of the first things I realized, and this was 18 years after my first OA meeting, I realized that I had never taken the first step in 18 years. And I couldn't see it until after those 18 years. I mean, I'd done the steps thoroughly, very thoroughly. But that idea that you were all powerless over food, but I wasn't quite powerless over food. I would eat the bag and I would leave three in the bottom. I would take the frozen thing out of the freezer and I would eat it and I would leave a little corner of it. So I wasn't, you were powerless. I wasn't really powerless. I had never eaten after dinner again. I had never, I hadn't had crunchy snacks in 40. It just, I had things to tell myself I was different. And I walked back into that meeting 23 years. I said, hey, you've probably gained 100 pounds. You're powerless over food. And that was the beginning of my real recovery. So I got a sponsor, and my way of picking a sponsor at that time, and since then, I had the sponsor I found then for 9 years, and the one I have now ever since then, I pick, it's not so much somebody who has what I want, but somebody I'm drawn to because for some mysterious reason, I feel completely willing to be completely, completely honest with them about my food and everything else. And that for me is what makes them the sponsor for me. And there are other things that I've realized because I've gone through periods with my car. So, well, should I, you know, I hear other people talking, well, I don't, my sponsor doesn't do this with me or I don't do that with my sponsor. And then I realize this is somebody who understands me so deeply and gives me, meets my needs. And in this particular case, I don't talk to my sponsor very freely, frequently. She doesn't live in New York anymore and I send her my food every day, but she is such a spiritual role model for me, and she also gives me unconditional love and acceptance. She gives me the feeling of approval, and she really makes me believe in myself that I am worthy, you know, both the good and the bad that we're told our higher power gives us. Well, I can't always feel my higher power giving it. My sponsor gives that to me. And I don't know if I would get that from any other spot. And she also happens to, I'm a creative. I have a couple of creative fields that are my fields. And so does she. And she understands that piece of me. And, you know, I apply the program to, she gets that, which a lot of other people in my life don't. So that's very, very helpful to me. And it's, you know, that part of my recovery is about acceptance of the success part and the failure part. And, you know, what place acceptance has in it, what place humility has it, and what place allowing myself to know that my gifts are special has in it. You know, I have a sponsor who understands that part of me, and that's very valuable to me. So, you know, so, okay, I don't tell her all about my life on the phone every day. That's not what I need from my sponsor. You know, I can get that or whatever else I need from other people in my life, other program friends, other friends, my partner, you know, whatever it is. But it's all really, I mean, it's kind of higher power thing. It's all about trusting that I'll know what I need, because recovery and higher power and working the program and doing the steps, I mean, it's taken the 40 years, 40 plus years and the 79 and a half years to give me the kind of confidence to trust myself and not need to be checking in with some external source of approval. And in fact, my sponsor's mantra, you know, she sometimes drives me crazy when I do ask her for, you know, for guidance. She tends to say, you know what to do, which can be annoying. But her mantra that she always comes back, you know, they all have one, but hers is, put your own recovery first. And for me, I mean, I'm really more of a primary codependent than a primary addict. I have this one addiction to the food. I'm not somebody who, oh, I'm addicted to everything. That's just not my story. But she says, put your own recovery first. Now, what that means can mean a thousand different things depending on the situation. But, you know, gradually, more is revealed about how I can do that and do it with honesty, with integrity, with all the principle, with humility, with generosity, with all the principles of the program working for me. So let's talk. How many minutes?
20 minutes.
Good. So I'm just up to the steps. and the promises. I've done, in over 40 years, I've worked the steps all the time, but three really, really, really major rounds of the steps at the beginning, after 20 years, and just in the past year or two. And I have not done them with the big book because, I don't know, it's really important for me to do them in my own programs and keep the focus on what my issues really are. That's just for me. And what I do is I use the book actually, at least once I've done it with the OA 12 and 12 and used not the workbook, but the actual step book. And I'm a writer and I've been keyboarding for decades. So I think fast, I write fast, I type fast. And I take months and months and months, and I write and I write and I write until everything I have to say is out. So I'm fearless and I'm thorough and I'm honest. And I think if I think of something else, whether it's relevant to the question or not, if I'm digging deeper into the truth of what I need to turn over in the step, I'll write that too. And at the end, I want to get, and it's, I'm sometimes surprised, you know, they're not always reluctant. They're not always, you know, they're sometimes reluctant to sit down. I say, no, I want to turn off the whole thing. I want us to sit down. If we need to do it in different, you know, sessions, fine, but I want to turn over the whole thing. And that's the way I've done my fifth steps. And I've also, you know, with the eighth step and the ninth step, I've also checked in with my sponsors on that one. And I must say, in long-term recovery and doing the step, each time I'm afraid there'll be nothing new. You know, each time I think, how can there be more? And each time there's more. The first set of steps, it was really all about the things that I was told about myself that turned out not to be true, and the things that did turn out to be true. I mean, all the stuff about my being a very controlling person. Yes, that was true, and I've had to work on that all these years. But in fact, in these recent steps, just in the last couple of years, that isn't even an issue. For example, a few years ago, I stopped doing boards and committees because I don't like the person I become. And there were years when I stopped, before the pandemic, that I stopped going to business meetings in program because I didn't like the person I became. I just started to try to take charge, and it was better for me not to. But recently in my home meeting, I've started to do very active service because it's a healthy meeting. I care about the meeting. I want to, you know, I want it to last, and I'm willing to give service. And it's in a very different spirit. It has nothing to do with control or being in charge. I feel so let go about, you know, how things come out. And I think people perceive me differently, and that's new. It's just been a very gradual process. And I don't want to stand up and say me, me, me in the way that I did most of my life, but it's been an organic change. I couldn't make it happen any faster than it did. I mean, I think back 40 years, somebody said, pick or pitch. I wanted to pick every person who shared if it was up to me to choose. And now I wouldn't dream of doing, of course, pick the first person, let them pick the next person. You know, I don't have to be in charge. I don't want to be in charge. But that's taken 40 years. It takes as long as it takes. On the other hand, I was always labeled selfish in my family. I'm not selfish. I think generosity is one of my biggest assets, one of my character assets. And people who love me and are kind to me have validated that. You know, I stopped asking my family because they don't understand me. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that came out the first time. After 20 years, when I did the steps again, what came out was some entirely new stuff that I hadn't even been able to see the first time, that had been busting my chops for years. There was always, I only ever wanted people to love me. And yet there would be situations where people didn't like me, some incredibly painful situations where I had gotten kicked out of groups and I didn't understand why. Well, when I did my step work, I could see, for example, that if I thought of something funny or clever to say, I would say it and then I would say it again and again and again. You know, I was so unconscious and people didn't like it. I was transformed my ability to be in groups, to see that about myself and to stop doing it. I mean, it took 20 years for me to see that. It was right in my face and I couldn't see it about myself. I thought I was being funny. I thought I was being clever. It didn't occur to me. The other person might not think it was so funny. So, you know, that was the kind of thing. Now, this past time, what I saw was there were not too many people on my amends list in step eight. And for the first time after 40 years, I could see what people are talking about when they talk about making amends to themselves. Now, I have had a very blessed life. I have not lived through a lot of trauma. I mean, I've had some painful things happen to me, but compared to what I heard people talk about in meetings, I've been very, very blessed and lucky. But I could see the subtle ways in which I had been hurt and I had skated over it in my desire to make things okay or to make others okay. But it took all this time. It was new self-knowledge. So, you know, it's just remarkable how the steps keep giving. And the promises have all come true for me. How many minutes have I got?
You have about 10 or 12 minutes.
Good. Okay. Because I do want to talk about the promises. Tell me when I have about, tell me when I have five, okay? All
Okay.
right. I just want to say they have all come true for me. And I'll just talk about a couple of them. And one is we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And this has been illuminated for me as I'm getting older and thinking about aging and thinking about the past more. I really feel blessed by my past. And as I do the step work, you know, I think, like most people, I was terrified to do step four the first time. And now I advise people to start with their character assets and see what's good about them. And I did, you know, I was able to see the good in myself, not somebody who couldn't see that at all because I didn't have an abusive childhood. But I mean, now the progression has been to approaching with joy the idea of looking at that past And some wonderful things have happened in the amends process, so that there's an unfolding of revelation. There's a series of revelations about the past that come in following it through, or even reaching back into it. You know, I haven't just not shut the door. I've kind of reached back, opened it again, had several sets of new revelations about what really happened. You know, that some of that has led to my, you know, realizing that I did owe amends to myself, sometimes realizing there were more mistakes I made that I hadn't noticed before. I mean, just, it's all delightful to me now. Because it's all okay. And there's a sense of joy, you know, in the imperfection, and that it's just part of who I am. You know, my sponsor doesn't stop loving me. My higher power doesn't stop loving me. And I don't have to stop loving me, because I can see these things that I could never love, never see before. And the other one I'll just say is fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. Well, in my other pro, that fear of people did a complete turnaround. And that happened years ago. But the fear of economic insecurity, I think, was the last to go. And it's a miracle that it's really gone, especially, I mean, this is a tough economy. My various careers never turned out quite the way I wanted them to. My husband is still working. And, you know, we're concerned about, you know, on the brink of having enough. And I'm just not scared. And some of it has to do with, it's really the fear of that is lifted. And if I stay in today and I have that faith, it's really okay not to be scared. And, you know, just seeing the abundance in my life and realizing how blessed I am and having the gratitude. That promise has absolutely come true. And the only thing that was standing in its way was fear. And also, you know, I've done the footwork. I've made good decisions. I'm lucky to have a partner. You know, I'm not in it alone. And I've worked hard. But also, having a program, or two programs, or three programs, that tell me I don't have to be ruled by fear is really the magic bullet. So I just, you know, the last thing I really wanted to get to was to talk about today. And my home meeting is the Tuesday night aging meeting, which is aging in OA, body image, health, and acceptance. And I've been in that one since the beginning. It's been going more than 2.5 years. It's on Tuesday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central. And it has taken me through huge acceptance of the aging process. And some health issues. And I think also real peace with my food. And that huge, huge acceptance, you know, and the body stuff. When you get to be 79, if you never had a tiny waist, you're never going to have a tiny waist. You know, if, you know, you never had breasts like Barbie's, you're not going to have them now. And as I get older, it's so obvious that it doesn't matter anymore. And seeing it within the framework of recovery and acceptance, and seeing it among other aging people, mostly women in that meeting, It is such a blessing. It is so relaxing. So, you know, I think it's made me love myself. And also, I love that word, aging. I mean, elderly, yuck, you know, senior citizen, crone, I don't think so. Aging is fine. I'm an aging woman. I'm an aging Jewish woman. We also don't have thin thighs and legs out to here. We only have legs half out to here, Ashkenazic Jewish women. You know, and it's okay. I'm myself. I just had a joy in being myself that recovery has given me. And really, what it boils down to is one day at a time, acceptance is the answer, and gratitude. Wow, I have 5 minutes left, and I was about to say that's all there is to it. But let me talk about how I practice. Well, let me talk how I practice just those three things. The one day at a time. Well, one thing that has gone is worrying about tomorrow and yesterday. Really, really, really. Oh my God, reflex has disappeared. I don't freak out. If there's a crisis, one moment at a time, I deal with it. And it's organic. It's been lifted. It's not me. It's higher power. And that's really only in the last couple of years. It's taken all this time. I couldn't make it happen before it happened, but it's happened. And if somebody said, oh, I wish I was like you. I wish I didn't get so upset and freak out. I said, well, you're not 79 yet. It takes, I don't know, it's a blessing, it's a gift. And the acceptance is, it really, I mean, in the world we're living in, which is so difficult, and in my opinion, so disappointing and unexpected, everything in life is unexpected. Everything is unexpected, you know, and once, thank God, the program tells us that we can't do anything about outcomes. And that if we have expectations and they're not met, we have to lower our expectations. So in any situation, acceptance is the answer. So, you know, I can remind myself of that. Acceptance is the answer. Acceptance is the answer. Acceptance is the answer. And it really works. And if I forget it, I remind myself. And the gratitude can always bring me back to my center. I'm really looking forward. This time of year, on Thanksgiving morning every year, I write a gratitude list and I send it as an email to my sponsor. And I just write and write and write and write and write until I can't think of anything more. You know, sometimes I say grateful, sometimes I say thankful, but I just write and write and write and write until I can't think of anything else to write. And I think it's just a delightful part of the day for both of us every year. So, and you know, and when I share, I just feel so grateful and so much in my, you know, sitting on my couch by myself, I could get depressed, negative, and feel useless and hopeless. But I come to a meeting and I get to share and I get to talk to you beautiful people. And I am so blessed and so very grateful indeed. So thanks for listening. And I think now I am through.